Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Hey, Mona.
Hi, Mark. How are you?
I am doing great. You know, it's been a minute, as we say here in the South, since we've done an episode. I know a couple of months ago, we had such a really in-depth episode where we covered over a dozen projects, and we've got a lot of great feedback on that. And that was a really hard episode to work on and produce. So we took a couple months break here, but now we're back, and I'm hoping we can discuss what's going on with the program.
Right, Mark. Well, not a lot has been happening with very much in the country, as you know, because of COVID. Mm-hmm. But there's always something or another happening with EB5. EB5 doesn't stand static at all. It's probably the most dynamic program that we have out there. And I thought, who would be the best person to talk about what's going on with EB5 program, with Congress, etc., but our own dear Executive Director of IIUSA, Aaron Grau. So we invited him on the show today. Aaron, are you there?
I am. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming back.
Aaron, what's been going on? I know that people have been silent because it's all been focused on COVID, but you guys haven't. You've been busy.
Yes, the association has been busy. The industry has been busy, whether they're taking steps to adjust to what COVID has presented it, or they're actually actively working with new investors or trying to understand how the regulations have been impacting them. There's a lot going on, and most of what we have been focused on, at least from my day to day, has been either advocacy, discussing the nuts and bolts of what this program will look and feel like after a reauthorization, or education. And we've had a lot of webinars that have been focused on specific market segments, and we're planning on doing a lot more of that work before the end of the year.
Aaron, prior to COVID, or right at the beginning of COVID, there was a lot of talk about the possibility of the program having perhaps a special program for COVID with a reduced fee and maybe more visas. I know that was just up in the air. It all came from a Politico article. But do you have any information on that?
Well, only to say that there is an increasing recognition among policymakers on both sides of the aisle, as well as the administration, that the EB5 program provides a benefit to the economy. And I mean, as I mentioned the last time we met, you know, what drew me to this program originally was not its immigration aspects, but its economic development aspects. And I'm very grateful to say that a lot of policymakers and staffers have begun to see that light as well, despite what concerns they may have, good, bad, or otherwise, around, quote, immigration. So there's a lot of conversations afoot.
Yeah, I noticed that you've been meeting with different organizations and communities. I believe that the CEO of the U.S. Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, Ramiro Cavazos.
Yes.
He made a very good point. He said that immediately after the 2008 financial crisis, quote, EB5 investors helped spark the economy, generating over $20 billion in non-U.S. taxpayer investments, creating more than 730,000 American jobs. We now need that kind of spark more than ever, quote, unquote. And you yourself have stated that reforming and cementing a long-term reauthorization can generate more than $9 billion annually of non-U.S. taxpayer investment.
Yes. The Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, the Latino Coalition, and several other industry groups, as well as other chambers of commerce, are signing on to a support letter that we're submitting to Congress, you know, emphasizing the need for reauthorization. And part of my argument, you're right, Mona, has been the economic impact that this program can have. If you recall that, you know, the minimum investment amount back in November, because of the new regulations, was increased from $500,000 to $900,000. And if you assume that everybody who's going to make an investment is going to make the investment at the lower investment amount, which may or may not be true. It's probably not true. Some people will make a higher investment amount. If you take that 900,000 and you multiply it by the available, or what we feel should be the available 10,000 visas per year for the program, that's $9 billion. And that doesn't even begin to account for the catalytic impact that EB-5 investments can have on a project. So some calculations have it upwards of $32 to $60 billion per year that flows into the U.S. economy, all stemming from non-tax dollars, which is just, those are real numbers. Those are real numbers.
Those are real numbers. And right now, the U.S. economy can certainly use that.
Yeah, those 10,000 visas, if each one had at least 10 jobs, I mean, that's 100,000 jobs. So that's also an economic benefit.
Right, Mark, that is the question. Aaron, what's going on with the derivative count? Because right now, although we have 10,000 visas, we all know that the 10,000 number also counts the derivatives, meaning the wife, the children, the one wife and the children. So we're not getting 10,000. We're probably getting 3,000 or 4,000.
Right. The general number is maybe a third, so 3,333. But I mean, who knows what that is from year to year. But your point is well taken. And, you know, members of the House Judiciary Committee, as well as their staff, have acknowledged the issue around visas. I mean, they are very plain spoken about it. And they say, we get it. We understand what you're saying. Immigration, for better or worse, is a hot topic on Capitol Hill. And so before COVID, it was almost a non-starter. Before COVID, there was just a nice pat on the head and said, we understand, Aaron, but immigration, hot button issue. I don't want to say the tables have completely turned, but I do want to acknowledge that others are acknowledging the crisis that we are in from an economic perspective and what an appropriate derivative count would mean to helping that crisis. There's an unfortunate and old saying, never let a good crisis go to waste. I'm hoping that allows folks to sort of see the light as to what this program can do economically.
Yeah, we need to get the information out. I think that it's so important to keep educating Congress, and you're doing a great job with that. But I have to say, I've had some conversations myself, and just even recently I spoke with Congressman McCaul, and he's from Texas. I put forth what I believe that EB-5 should be bifurcated. The project part should be not with USCIS, but should be with the Chamber of Commerce, and then leave the immigration part with USCIS once the Chamber of Commerce have approved a project. I would like to see progress in that sort of direction. Do you have any thoughts?
I do. I mean, I agree with you. I don't know if I'm getting out over my skis as executive director of an association, you know, to saying that. I'm sure there are others in our family who may have something to say, but I mean, I would advocate for what you're saying, Mona. It makes perfect sense because, as I said, going all the way back, what attracted me to this program is economic impact. That's what this is. And so I think it makes whole sense to have not only the Department of Commerce weigh in on how these projects will impact communities and to monitor them and to assure their integrity, but also they're going to be much better positioned to monitor workforce development and hiring. And the catalytic impacts that these projects have. It's not the job of the Department of Homeland Security to monitor economic impact.
I agree.
It's not their job. I wouldn't want it to be their job.
Right. Well, Aaron, there's always a dark horse in the room. And one of the big dark horses right now is the fact that COVID has negatively impacted a number of EB-5 projects. And the papers have discussed it at quite length. For example, here in New York, we had a lot of press coverage about Related's project in Hudson Yards. And they're members of IUSA.
They are. I don't know how qualified I am to speak about how COVID and how, you know, the financial sands shifting impacts a project. As go projects, so goes the status of the investors, you know, the immigrant investors who are part of it. And so there's obviously an incredibly tight link between their progress and the status of the investors. I've learned that navigating those waters from an investment perspective and a development perspective is something that's brand new to me. I've learned the term workout. I thought workouts were, you know, you go for a run and you lift some weights, but that's not the case. And it's an unfortunate set of circumstances, but
it is.
I'm an optimist.
I'm an optimist too, but I like to paint the picture as it is. And investors should understand that they are making an at-risk investment.
True.
And I think that members of Congress should understand they're not buying a visa. They are very much taking a risk. They're looking at a project, they're looking at where it is, and there could be forces beyond their control. Sometimes that is the case, and sometimes it is something pretty obvious that it wasn't the right investment, but it's not a visa for sale. That's what the point I'm trying to make.
Well, you're absolutely right. And I've written an op-ed not too long ago that makes that point. This is not a visa for sale. And I think it's incumbent upon the industry and it's incumbent upon IIUSA to help the industry educate investors so that they're very aware. I mean, they should go in with their eyes wide open. This is an investment and people should take their due diligence seriously. It's a novel investment because it's obviously tied to an additional benefit of a potential green card. But, you know, investment and the term at risk are genuine and people should be aware.
Yeah. Some of the work that you do in IIUSA is excellent. You do keep everybody in key, not just with Congress, but with what's going on with visas. You had Charlie Oppenheim again. You're probably the only organization which has Charlie there so often. And Charlie, in case anybody didn't know, is the head of the Department of State and really the man who knows when you're going to get your visas.
Yeah, well, I cannot take credit for Charlie's participation with IIUSA. There's a relationship that goes back further than my tenure, and our staff, Lee and Ashley Casey, both have a very good working relationship with Charlie, and it's to their credit that he's willing to come and work with us. And it was good to have him on. He had some very interesting information.
Well, his conversation certainly spurred a lot of WhatsApp and social media discussions, because he did point out that India, which is one of the most popular countries right now, is current. After telling us last year and the year before that we would have a 5-year backlog for Indian nationals. So that was certainly welcome and certainly brought on a lot of inquiries. He also did mention, though, that with the consulates being closed with COVID, that we are going to be facing perhaps more visas for adjustment and not so many for the consulate, which is unfortunate for clients sitting overseas.
Yeah, my understanding with regards to, it's not my understanding. I say it's more my supposition. So indeed, the consulates have been closed. And so fewer visa processing has taken place. The flip side of that happens to be a perhaps expected move from the White House in extending an executive order that is suspending other employment-based visa categories, which means that the visas that will not be used for those visa categories may drift down to the EB-5 category, in which case we would have more visas to work with in the year to come. Now, that doesn't completely ameliorate the fact that you've got consulates that have been closed and that there are visas that haven't been processed. But it may ameliorate the fact that, you know, if we lose those visas, we'll be gaining them elsewhere in the year to come.
Yeah, that brought a lot of attention, that proclamation. And so very interesting that EB-5 was singled out as not to be included.
Right. That was good to see.
It was. Did you guys have anything to do with that, you and your legislative boys?
It was 100% me. That was all me. I take 100% credit. It's so nice being on your show. Thank you so much.
Go on a high note.
No, I mean, we have not had those conversations with the White House. And maybe that's an even better, you know, indication than bragging about having done it. Because I think what it means is that the White House also understands the value of EB-5. I think they also understand the economic impact it can mean to the country. And rather than inappropriately suspending a job creation program, they left it out of those proclamations.
Yeah, well, that certainly was encouraging. And my conversations, as I said, with various members of Congress has certainly also been encouraging those who understand EB-5. I know we still have a long hurdle when it comes to the looking at the security and the integrity. We still hear negative comments relating to frauds, etc. But on the whole, I believe the IAUSA are really pushing towards putting in integrity measures voluntarily.
Well, here's some more evidence for you insofar as congressional attitude. Recently, there was a letter sent to the president. It was signed by two members. One was Jim Jordan, who is now the ranking member of the House Judiciary Committee and also therefore sits on the House Subcommittee on Immigration and Citizenship. And the other one was a gentleman named Guy Reschenthaler. He happens to be my congressman in southwestern PA. In any event, the letter encouraged or demanded, I guess, that the White House pay very specific attention to the EB-5 program and specifically the fraud that is within the program, specifically having to do with Chinese investors. There is an ongoing drumbeat on Capitol Hill, for better or worse, depending on your perspective, that there is a Chinese issue here. And, you know, every time President Trump uses the word Chinese virus or Wuhan virus, you know, that sentiment is exacerbated. I raise this point because within the letter in which they raised concerns about Chinese investors and fraud and EB-5, two very conservative members of Congress also said very clearly that this is a laudable program with laudable goals. And I think that speaks volume, you know, to the shoe leather that a lot of people have undertaken over the last 2 years to educate folks. It was good news. I mean, I don't care for the anti-Chinese sentiment. I think it's misplaced, but it was very encouraging to see two conservative members of Congress say that EB-5 is laudable. That's good.
Well, Aaron, I like to think that Mona and I are doing our part as well to educate those on Capitol Hill on EB-5. In fact, I was just checking a stats as you were talking about the acknowledgments from the White House and everything in Washington, D.C. I was looking at our stats. It looks like it's a number three country in the last 30 days as far as folks listening to the show in the U.S. I mean, there's Mumbai, India, and Buenos Aires, Argentina. Hi, folks out there. But as far as U.S., my hometown of Atlanta, Mona's hometown, New York, we're far down. I don't even see Atlanta on there. I think New York, we're number 10, but Washington, D.C., number three. So folks are listening, and hopefully they'll continue listening, and this will help.
I hope so. The more that we can repeat ourselves over and over and over again, the better. I mean, that's just messaging 101, and if they're listening, that's great.
Aaron, nothing is perfect. There are other immigration arms have been there from the outset, and there has been fraud and there has been misuse in every section and every department, in EB-2s and EB-3s. We can't avoid that. We can only do our best. And I think we have so many projects which we can really show where we have really brought out the best of EB-5. Unfortunately, it's not newsworthy enough for many of these newspapers.
You're right. I was just about to say that. Good news doesn't sell. So unfortunately, we don't get the kind of coverage that we want to on our big success stories. And there are many, 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 many of them. And Mona, to your point as well, you know, about there being fraud. Hey, newsflash, you can't avoid it. We're talking, as we said earlier in the show, we're talking about real money here.
Yes.
And anytime those values are in play within a program, you know, I hate to say it, but it's the truth. You're going to have some folks who are going to try to game the system. And I'll say this as well. To the extent there is fraud in EB-5, I want people to stop blaming the investors.
Right.
It's not the investors. You know, I mean, there are folks in business here in the United States who need to be called to task. You know, I was reading about oversight committees that were established even in the Truman administration to take a look at, you know, what abuses have been happening in the War Department, consequent to World War II. Look, if you're going to point to fraud, you know, how about Medicare fraud?
Yes,
should we
exactly.
get rid of Medicare? You know,
yes.
Should we get rid of the Department of Defense because there's fraud? It's a silly one.
Yeah, the $300 screwdriver. I hear you.
Right.
You know, Aaron, EB-5 has been traditionally, well, or rather, as I always say, it's been hijacked by the real estate moguls over the last few years. But what we have seen, especially recently with the increase into 900, is a move and a shift away from real estate per se into more businesses. And that's another reason why I would like to see it moved from USCIS actually to the Department of Commerce, because I don't feel that USCIS really understands businesses.
Well, I think you're right. And again, I'll reiterate, nor would I expect them to. That's just not what their bailiwick is. And And I think you're right, too, that the predominance of projects are focused on real estate development. As a quick tangent, I can tell you that even that category is looking for things that are quote-unquote non-traditional. We did a webinar not that long ago with a company that does exploration of non-traditional resources and assets to include in capital stacks. Everybody on the call was a real estate developer wondering where are they going to get revenue for their projects as sources dry up. But more to your point with regards to troubled businesses, you know, the regulations for the EB-5 program make a very specific point of saying that investment into a troubled business is an allowable investment.
But the problem is the definition for troubled businesses, really, you have to go back to the last 2 years of finances. And it doesn't help if somebody has really struggled right now in COVID.
Oh, the last 4 months, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So we really need to perhaps change the definition.
I think you're right. And IIUSA has begun exploring that, developing white papers and suggestions on how to change the definition to allow for COVID-related businesses who are struggling to receive EB-5 money. It's just a no-brainer.
No, well, actually, just for our listeners, in case people don't understand what I'm talking about here, In a normal project, if you come in and you put your investment into a project, you have to create 10 new permanent positions. If a business is a troubled business and you can save 10 jobs, that's also counted. So normally you don't save jobs. So if you come into a running business, you can't count those jobs, but you can if it's a troubled business. But again, we have to meet USCIS's definition of troubled business.
And that's been a challenge and pretty hard to do in the past, hasn't it, Mona?
Yeah, it's not the most easiest to do.
Yeah.
And also people have not really gone into troubled businesses as much, not invested, because if something has been in trouble for 2 years, they really don't see that much value in that. Whereas if something has gone into trouble over the last 6 months, say it might be an amazing restaurant, but they've just been closed because of COVID, it makes perfect sense to bring them into this category.
Yes, certainly.
I agree. And I think what it takes is what I would consider to be some minor edits, minor tweaks to the regulations to allow for COVID-related, quote, troubled businesses to qualify under the definition and open those businesses up to possible EB-5 investment. It is something that has begun to resonate with the administration, as well as with folks on Capitol Hill. And it's something that seems to me to be an additional reason for members of Congress to quickly gravitate towards a reauthorization and expansion. This is a real resource.
Yeah, Aaron, another interesting area that you're going to see, well, as I've mentioned before, one of the popular countries right now is India. And India has a lot to do with the pharmaceutical industry. And with hopefully an imminent vaccine, which has to be produced and it has to be manufactured, I can see that as being an area which would come in also.
Yeah, well, and a lot of people have articulated their concerns. I'm going to tread carefully here. Have articulated their concerns about supply chains around PPEs and other medical devices and medical equipment, and the extent to which those supply chains are jeopardized because of their distance from the United States, overseas manufacturing, and wouldn't it be a great idea to allow EB-5 investments to bolster those production lines in the U.S.? And I think that makes sense too.
Yep. And one more area which we have talked about quite a lot on this program is technology, because I would really like to see U.S. money or U.S. facilities moving into technology more and really developing that. And that's one area that EB-5 can come into.
Yeah, that would be phenomenal.
Yeah, on the last episode, one of the projects we talked to was PropTech, where they did virtual home tours, virtual real estate tours.
Yeah, it was feasibility. I think it was feasibility studies that they were doing. And instead of somebody going into a person's house, they were doing it virtually with a camera.
That's right. And they started that before COVID. COVID came, they had an even greater demand for their virtual services.
Yeah, I think like that, we are going to see projects pop up. We are going to see technology pop up. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to keep EB-5 in 2021 and not keep it in 2012 or something.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm wrong here, but my assumption about immigrants to the United States who are pursuing an EB-5 visa, I think many of them, at the very least, have an entrepreneurial spirit to them. And I think maybe that's part of what attracts them to the United States to begin with. And what better way for them to follow through on their entrepreneurial spirit than to begin to take a look at programs or projects in the United States that are not necessarily tied to real estate. Businesses, troubled businesses, new businesses, you know, there are business incubators across the country. Most of them are affiliated with universities and research and development projects that would benefit immeasurably from EB-5 investment. And I think some of those entrepreneurs who are willing to take that risk could see immeasurable return on their investment. I learned through my study of opportunity zones that the return on investment on a piece of property is steady as she goes. The return on investment into a business is the exact opposite. However, the possibilities of profit and large returns are huge. You know, you're not going to see that on a piece of property, but you could very well see that in a business. And I think that that spirit needs to be captured by how we talk about EB-5.
Aaron, that reminds me of another area which I have read about recently. Very interesting. Again, it's a troubled business, the hospitality industry, some of the small hotels, perhaps around New York and areas like that, which have really been out for the last few months. They are not able to catch up with all the debts and the problems that they have with being out of business for so long. And they are able to shift their model to something like affordable housing. And whether or not, I'm giving that as an example, but it's something so completely different. And whether or not that would be accepted within EB-5, again, we could use models like that or examples like that of how we could really benefit the economy.
Yeah, I agree. I think it simply needs to, it requires some flexibility, mental flexibility and a willingness to take a look under the hood at projects that are non-traditional EB-5 projects. That is to say, non-real estate related projects. And I'm not knocking real estate development by all means.
No.
I mean, it is a very effective way to stimulate the economy. A lot of jobs there, but the post-COVID world is going to be a different place. And I think that money is money. Investment is investment. A willingness to take a risk is a willingness to take a risk. There are a number of opportunities that are out there that would benefit our economy.
I agree. And with the figures now at 901.8 million, it takes a different type of person to be able to have this entrepreneurial spirit and move forward and take this risk.
Yep, I agree. And my guess is that there are a lot of those individuals among the EB-5 emigrant communities.
So, Aaron, if anybody thought that IAUSA was stuck in the past, if they should listen to this podcast, they'll certainly know that, no, that's not the case at all.
You're absolutely right. This organization is forward-leaning. We are conducting outreach to non-traditional communities that have a vested that may not have even known they had a vested interest in EB-5. And we're looking forward to bringing their expertise and their political capital to bear on a program that is well worth it. Folks like economic development organizations, chambers of commerce, city councils, mayor's offices, all of them have a vested interest in helping their community from a workforce perspective and economic development perspective. And EB-5 can make that happen.
Yeah, and I do appreciate the fact that you really give it a democratic voice. You have a leadership program, you have a public policy program, and you allow your members in all of the different areas and arenas to bring their voices out and always looking for new ideas.
It's the exciting part of my job. I learned a long time ago in association management that you really have a family that you're working with. And the fun part is that there's always arguments. There's always
spats. Siblings. So I was about to say that, this big sibling rivalry.
Oh, boy. But through that, shall we call it, through that egalitarian process comes a lot of good ideas and ultimately a stronger organization. So yeah, everybody has a say. I say to everybody all the time, here's my cell phone number. It's 412-480-1809. Call me.
I don't know who to say that.
Call me. Let's talk.
Well, Aaron Growl, Executive Director of IIUSA, thank you for coming back on EB-5 Investment Voice.
Anytime. It's a lot of fun talking with you guys. It's a great topic.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us today on EB-5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw and Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB-5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB-5 Investment Voice.